What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
His message packs a knockout punch, but his moves are silky smooth, stylish, even seductive. Cool cat from the mean street, Snoop Dogg was a modern-day outlaw who put a wicked new wrinkle on West Coast rap. Raised a choir boy, Snoop was seduced by the glamour of gangs, guns, and high-stakes drug dealing. But after two stints in the slammer, Snoop Dogg went straight and found the mentor that would make him a star. Paired with pioneering producer Dr. Dre, he was crowned the dog father of gangsta rap. But then Snoop Dogg was collared for murder. A deadly confrontation left Snoop facing 25 years to life. Acquitted but rattled, Snoop quickly changed his tough guy tune. Now, the tale of a dog whose bark is worse than his bite. Snoop Dogg, the story behind the music. It was an eerie spectacle, a lavish, if not bizarre, production featuring a gospel choir, a preacher, and throngs of mourners grieving before a casket. An elaborate and morbid display staged to announce the arrival of the reigning king of rap at the 1994 MTV Video Music Awards. Snoop Doggy Dogg's song was called Murder Was the Case, and that's exactly what he was facing. 25 to life for a cold-blooded killing. With millions watching, Snoop defiantly made his plea.
I'm innocent.
You can't really run from violence, you know what I'm saying? Because it tends to come find you when you come from this lifestyle that I'm from.
He was just 23 years old, and after selling 9 million albums, was the biggest name on the hip-hop scene. But he'd learned that ruling the world of gangsta rap made him a target for trouble.
No matter how much money you make, how much power you got, you can't change time and you can't change your destiny.
Snoop seemed destined to be something special from the very beginning. He started his extraordinary life with an extraordinary name, Cordozer Brodus.
We figured that nobody would pronounce his real name right, so we decided to name him Snoopy.
I used to watch Charlie Brown, and they used to say I look like him because I used to watch him so much. To this day, my mama never called me by my real name. She always called me Snoop.
Born in Long Beach, California on October 21, 1971, Snoop was the second of three boys. His mom, Beverly Brodus, was a struggling single parent who often worked two and three jobs just to keep her family alive in one of Southern California's toughest neighborhoods.
Long Beach is special, just like any other part of the world is special. You just have to put a spotlight on it and let it shine.
But in Snoop's neighborhood, the spotlights blazed down from police helicopters. The city is home to more than 20 gangs, unrelenting crime, and rampant poverty. Snoop's mother did what she could to combat the mean streets, so church was part of their weekly ritual, and at 10, Snoop joined the Sunday choir.
Back, he led some songs in the choir. That's when I found out how talented he was when I heard him sing.
My mama had me leading songs. I didn't really want to do it, but, you know, when you're a kid, you can't really fight your mama, and I mean, it was glorifying God's name, so I mean, I feel proud about it now, but I was kind of embarrassed back then.
But his mom had an unconventional side. Saturday night, she and Snoop would spin her favorite records, and the strict rules of the house would loosen for the night.
Sometimes Snoop would be my company. So I'd go to the store and buy us a six-pack of Swiss malt liquor, and he would drink with me.
We listened to old-school R&B music. We did the bump. We drank Swiss malt liquor. Bull. We party. I mean, we just had a good time, and that's what life was about back then.
But by the age of 12, Snoop was finding his own kind of music. In 1983, he discovered the emerging sound of rap and began inventing rhymes with his friends.
My homeboy had two turntables, and he had the records. And I used to just rap over, like, every day after school.
I mean, he was tight way back then because he was coming straight off freestyling.
His classmate, Warren G, encouraged Snoop to develop his talent.
I would tap him on the shoulder, and then I would point at something, and then he'd start freestyling.
He point at my shoes. I rap about my shoes. Whatever he point at, I'm just flowing, just busting. It's like he was training me, you know what I mean?
By the time he reached high school, Snoop was becoming a schoolyard celebrity and a favorite with the girls. Shante Taylor was just 14 years old when she met Snoop.
We kept running into each other, and he was just the coolest, so I had to talk to him.
She was nice, different than all the other girls, you know what I'm saying? Somebody that I felt like I could sit down and holler at.
Snoop and Shante dated off and on as teenagers, but at the time, Snoop's priority was music. He and his friend Warren hooked up with a kid named Nate Hale and formed a group called 213.
We came up with this song called Long Beach is a Mother. Me, him, and Warren G, and that was our first song we did together.
I was just trying to make music to represent Long Beach, because Long Beach was never getting no props, and I was just like, I'm from Long Beach to LBC, Eastside. I'm finna put it down for my city.
After school, 213 recorded tracks in a tiny studio in the back of a record store. And every week, Warren would take the tapes to his stepbrother, Dr. Dre, co-founder of the seminal gangster rap group, N.W.A.
That was our only hope. N.W.A. was just the top of the world, you know, and Warren being Dre's brother, man, we just saw that one avenue where we could get it.
Warren was coming at me, like, in a crazy way about his group, 213, but, you know, it was like the big brother, little brother kind of thing going on. Like, yeah, yeah, okay. I'll listen to him when I get a chance.
For months, Dre kept the boys at arm's length, tossing their tapes, ignoring their pleas.
It got certain points in the game where I was like, man, I'll give up on this. Throw all my raps in the trash can.
I would go downstairs and I'd take it out the trash, you know, and tell them, man, we got to do this. We got to sacrifice.
But to 17-year-old Snoop, sacrifice seemed senseless. When everywhere he looked, drug dealers were getting rich while he bagged groceries for minimum wage.
I had a job working at Lucky's, and I was getting like $85, $90 a week. And my homeboys were standing out in front of my apartment where I lived at, making like $1,500 a night. So 1 + 1 = 2.
With money as his motive, Snoop started selling crack cocaine for the Crips, one of L.A.'s most feared gangs.
Before you knew it, I made $600, $700 in two nights. Something I wasn't going to make in 6 to 7 weeks at Lucky. So before you know it, my mama's house becomes a target for being shot at.
And somebody drove by and shot, and a bullet went up over my head. And it was just the point that I had to say enough is enough.
I just told him that I got two other kids I got to raise, you know, and then I'm working hard too. And he just made his mind up that he's going to do what he wants to do. And that's what he did.
His decision broke his mother's heart. Beverly took her other sons and moved out of the neighborhood, severing all ties with Snoop. Just 17 and still in high school, Snoop was on the fast track to trouble. He bounced around, crashing on couches, sleeping in cars, dealing on the street. His old partner, Warren G, begged him to clean up his act and get back to music.
I would just tell him, you know, man, we need to try to do something different, man. I'm not trying to die out here on the street over nothing. I don't want you to end up getting killed over nothing.
Snoop managed to graduate in May of 1990, but less than a month later, his dealing days came to an abrupt end.
I sold to an undercover officer, and when they finally came back to get me, I still had the drugs on me. So I was like, I went ahead and just pleaded guilty.
And with that, 18-year-old Snoop was sentenced to 4 years in the Los Angeles County Jail. Next, from the big house to the doghouse, Snoop Doggy Dogg charges to the front of the Rat Pack. When Behind the Music continues.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my character, Gray Parrish, from my new series, Parrish.
Yeah, I can drive.
My character was a getaway driver.
Yeah!
I'm retired from life, you know that.
His business is failing, his house is going up for sale. He is the everyman.
Tell me about this driver job.
We got a lot of action in this show. We have moments of real danger, and we want to feel as if anything could happen. Gray is invited to drive for this man. He's invited to make money, and he quickly realizes this is not the right thing to do.
I did what you told me to.
And he's in a world over his head.
Now, let's go!
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC+.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Just out of high school, Snoop Dogg was doing time for selling crack cocaine. Once he aspired to be a rap star, but by the summer of 90, Snoop was resigned to a life as an inmate.
A lot of times it was cool, you know, sneak a little bit of weed in there, smoke weed, play basketball, drink coffee, rapping all night. You know, just having a good time. I mean, you know, after you get adjusted, you adjust. You know, this is home. Getting used to it.
But his cellmates urged Snoop to get out and stay out of prison. He was far too talented to waste his life behind bars.
They was like, man, dog, when you get up out of here, you need to be rapping, homie. You need to go really seriously put it down and get your rap on because you're tight.
After serving less than a year, Snoop was released in the spring of 91. Determined to make something of his life, Snoop steered clear of trouble. Put all his energy into making music. The going was tough, but Snoop got by with help from his friends.
They all let me stay with them and, you know, just took care of me and helped me with this rap thing. I wasn't making no money, but I was just determined to get it done.
We had left the hustling alone. We were starving. It was bad, you know, we didn't have nothing to eat.
Desperate for a break, Warren G tried one last time to get his stepbrother, Dr. Dre, to listen to the music he'd been making with Snoop.
I called him and I was asking if I could come hang with him. So he was like, yeah, one of my buddies having a bachelor party.
Just as the party got rocking, Warren slipped their demo tape into the mix.
Dre was like, who was that? I was like, that's Snoop. And I was like, that's what I've been telling you about the whole time, that's Snoop.
I was in love with the tape and I decided that, you know, I at least have to get him in the studio and see if we can vibe together at all.
The chemistry was electric. Snoop's vivid lyrics and smooth delivery blended perfectly with Dre's cutting-edge style.
It was just like raw talent, like an unpolished diamond, you know, that I had to work with.
He come right in there. Yeah, that's tight, that's tight. But say it like this. 1, 2, 3, get to the 4. You know what I'm saying? Just coaching me.
But a dangerous element would soon be added to the mix. In early 91, Dr. Dre teamed up with Marion Shug Knight to form Death Row Records. Dre was famous for his West Coast sound. Suge was notorious for his strong-arm tactics. Dre and Suge offered Snoop Death Row's debut project, the title track to the movie Deep Cover.
I mean, we did the song in a couple of hours from nothing, out of air, no samples, none of that. Before you knew it, he like,
that's hot. That's hot.
We just did the song and this happened and we both felt it.
I was like, boy, that is a hit right.
For fans of hip-hop, Deep Cover became the soundtrack for the summer of 91.
It's played on the streets and the clubs and the suburbs. It went everywhere. And it introduced Snoop, you know, to the whole world as this mysterious, laid-back character.
Deep Cover was hot, but their next project would ignite a hip-hop revolution. Snoop and Dre recruited an army of talented West Coast rappers to create an album that would take the music industry by storm.
It was all a family thing. It was Dre and Snoop, me, Warren, Daz, Corrupt, Rage, UL, and it was beautiful.
Recording sessions were fueled by large quantities of alcohol and a constant supply of powerful pot the crew called the Chronic.
I started bringing Chronic up there, and you know, I was like, Dre, you should call your album the Chronic. Because I don't even think Dre was smoking Chronic when he was working on his album. I'm the one who brought the Chronic to the table, they'll tell you.
The Chronic hit the stores in June of 1992. The album celebrated the gritty life of gangsters, but Snoop's disarming delivery seduced listeners well beyond the boundaries of rap. It shot to number 3 on the pop charts, making The Chronic the biggest crossover in the history of hip-hop.
The Chronic was the first commercial gangster rap record. It was the first gangster rap record that actually got regular airplay. It also showed that the hardness of the sound was finally getting to the mass public. That the mass public, i.e. white people, were buying.
Another writer had a term for Snoop, Warren G, and Dr. Dre after The Chronic came out, which was gangster-like. It had the gangster element, but it was still hip-hop, more so than just, you know, mindless gangster rap.
The Chronic was the first West Coast record that I can remember that played immediately on the East Coast. And, I mean, that might not really seem landmark now. But back then, in 1992 and 93, it was incredible.
By the beginning of 93, the album had sold more than 4 million copies. The sudden fame was a heady rush for 21-year-old Snoop.
The success of The Chronic was so overwhelming that, you know, it had to be celebrated on a daily basis.
I had never been in that situation before. So I still was like, I was still living off The Chronic. You know what I'm saying? I was loving that.
Then in the spring of 93, Snoop met a kindred soul, a rising rap star named Tupac Shakur.
It was a beautiful thing. The friendship was genuine because I believe we were the same kind of people, you know, in the same place at the same time.
Everybody out here got cases and a real brain and real thug lives to match these thug records.
But at the offices of Death Row Records, the atmosphere was anything but gangster-like. Suge Knight rode shotgun over the operation. According to insiders, he ruled by fear and intimidation. The FBI was investigating Death Row, suspecting widespread corruption, extortion, and fraud, but found few witnesses who were willing to talk.
There were stories of, you know, people being pistol whipped, you know, of people just being roughed up. I mean, people being slapped around. I mean, kind of stuff, you know, that you see in movies. And then you also, if you're around the street, it's just kind of standard operating practice.
I was a part of the problem, too. I had homies that were gangbanging that was a part of the problem as well.
Death Row was becoming a dangerous place. Rival gangs mixed in the hallways. Guns, drugs, and violence were a way of life. Through music, Snoop had hoped to escape the perils of the street, but now he was living in a far more hazardous world.
It was too much carelessness around me, you know. Whether it was my carelessness, my record label, my friends, it just was too much, you know, going on to where something had to happen, you know, to put everybody in check.
Like Snoop, Tupac was no stranger to trouble. He had grown up without a father, spent time behind bars, and found fame in rap. Tupac had a record deal, but Snoop thought he'd fit in well at Death Row.
I think stardom and trouble, you know, because we didn't have, you know, security, and I lived a gangbang lifestyle, and, you know, the lifestyle he lived, he had gangbangers with him, he had 40s with him, you know what I'm saying? So it was like the lifestyle we was living was, you know, it was wild and foul.
It would be another 2 years before Tupac would join Death Row. So it was up to Snoop and Dr. Dre to keep the label rolling. In the summer of 93, they teamed up to produce their first All Snoop release.
Our lives were straight up like, okay, we're gonna work and then we're gonna play. You know what I'm saying? And I think most of it was like play, straight up. We played like 60 to 70% of the time.
But the play of Dre, Snoop, and their Death Row cronies went well beyond the usual recording studio decadence. There were reports of weapons being brandished, fistfights erupting, of damaged and stolen property. It was so chaotic, Malik Lee was hired to be Snoop's full-time bodyguard.
A lot of times when the dummies come up there, they didn't really understand that, look, you know, we got to work now. We got to work for these 12 hours. And so people got restless, and you know, that's where a lot of drama happened.
Where The Chronic took just 4 months to make, Doggy Style was becoming an epic production.
You know, I think we got kicked out of 8 studios creating that album because we were all like having a bunch of fun and, you know.
A lot of the people that worked at these studios didn't understand our type of fun.
But Snoop's life was about to take a dangerous turn. It seemed he couldn't put his gangbanging days behind him, and trouble was always just around the corner. His bodyguard Malik was on constant alert.
He was a Crip, you know, and he had passes, you know, true enough, but still there was people that hate him, you know, and that's kind of how we got involved into the situation.
Malik had successfully defused several volatile encounters, but on Sunday, August 25th, 1993, his luck ran out.
That day just shouldn't have never happened, you know. That's when people ask me, do you wish something that never could have happened to you would have happened? And that's when I always say, I wish that day would have never happened.
There are conflicting reports of what exactly happened on that hot summer afternoon, but what is known is one man's life came to a sudden and violent end. According to Snoop and Malik, they were leaving Snoop's apartment for a recording session when they heard shouting from the street below.
Someone runs upstairs and they said, you know, there's somebody downstairs with a gun. So immediately I ran and I grabbed my gun.
Malik says when he looked down on the street from the apartment's balcony, he saw one of Snoop's friends arguing with 3 gang members in a car. He claims one of the passengers, Philip Waldemariam, had a gun.
This is like the second or third time where something this drastic has really happened. We were all kind of petrified.
Malik says that within minutes, the car drove away, and it seemed the danger had passed.
We figured that it's okay, everything is cool to go.
So according to Malik, Snoop got behind the wheel of his SUV and they headed for the studio. But just 2 blocks from home, Malik says they saw the same men sitting in a nearby park. One flagged them down.
So Snoop pulls over to the curb, you know, and I'm already hot, you know, so I already have to take out my gun and I put it on my lap. I'm already just anticipating there could possibly be a problem.
Malik says the gang member was apologizing for the earlier incident when Philip Waldemariam suddenly appeared from nowhere.
Out of the bushes. Philip is running up to the car and his friend tries to stop him. He pushes him out of the way. Either he was gonna die or I was gonna die. He lifts up his shirt and he reaches and I return.
Malik fired 2 shots into Waldemariam's body. He says they then fled the scene, not knowing if the man they'd shot was dead or alive. According to Malik, they called 911, then went into hiding.
The only reason why we did not go to the police then is because we had no representation. Our attorney, David Kenner, was in Miami.
Attorney David Kenner returned to Los Angeles and broke shocking news to Snoop and Malik. 25-year-old Philip Waldemariam was dead, and the police were hunting for Malik and Snoop.
I just went ahead and just told David Kenner I wanted to turn myself in because I didn't want to be, you know, looked at as somebody who did a crime and running.
In the wake of the fatal shooting, Snoop turned to the woman who'd first warned him about the dangers of gang life, his mother, Beverly. The two had had little or no contact for 4 years.
He told me everything that happened, and he said, I want you to hear it from me because it's going to be on TV and you're going to hear a lot of stories. And
I could feel it, and he felt really scared, and he just needed me. He just, you know, it's like he just needed that mother's touch just to know it's gonna be all right.
With the police still searching for Snoop, it was rumored that he would come out of hiding 7 days after the shooting at the MTV Video Music Awards.
The LAPD and the Sheriff's Department are combing the audience looking for Snoop Doggy Dogg. They're here to arrest him.
Snoop did appear, presenting an award with longtime collaborator Dr. Dre. After the show, he was arrested and charged with first-degree murder. Within hours, Death Row posted $1 million bail, and 22-year-old Snoop was back on the street. but the murder charge would hang over his head for years.
Probably the worst 2.5 years of my life.
Next, Snoop's trial and tribulations, when Behind the Music continues.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my character, Gray Parrish, from my new series, Parrish.
Yeah, I can drive.
My character was a getaway driver. Yeah!
I'm retired from life, you know that.
His business is failing, his house is going up for sale. He is the everyman.
Tell me about this driver job.
We got a lot of action in this show. We have moments of real danger, and we want to feel as if anything could happen. Gray is invited to drive for this man. He's invited to make money, and he quickly realizes this is not the right thing to do.
I did what you told me to.
And he's in a world over his head.
Now, let's go!
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
For Snoop Dogg, the fall of 93 was a time of gut-wrenching highs and lows. His long-awaited solo album, Doggy Style, was released and became the first rap album ever to debut at number one on the pop charts. But at the same time, Snoop was facing 25 years to life for the murder of gang member Philip Waldamerian. Headlines painted Snoop as a cold-blooded killer and made him a household name for people who'd never even heard a rap song.
I think the murder charge impacted the record sales greatly, just out of curiosity. It was like, who is this guy? Is he really all that he raps about?
I think it probably helped the sales, but it didn't help me because all the publicity I was getting was negative.
I just was looked at as a murderer, some evil person that just go out and just kill people and then rap about it and glorify it, and, you know, happy that somebody was dead. You know, and that's not me. You know, I felt very remorseful, still do.
But as the press condemned Snoop, fans were embracing him. His Doggy Style album produced hit after hit, selling more than 4 million copies.
Of course, rap fans automatically assume he's innocent, you know, because he's Snoop Dogg. But then there's this air of, you know, mystery, like maybe he did do it because he's a gang member.
Snoop says he tried to forget his legal problems, entrusting them to his attorney, David Kenner.
To be real with you, I really wasn't focused on this case because that's how David Kenner is. He's like, don't worry about it. Everything is everything. So I leave it in his hands and leave it in God's hands.
Snoop wasn't the only rapper running afoul of the law. In the summer of 95, his friend Tupac Shakur was again behind bars, accused of assault and sexual battery. Snoop convinced Death Row to post Tupac's $1.4 million bail. Then Suge Knight signed him to Death Row. Quickly, Snoop and Tupac teamed up to exploit their outlaw images with a song called America's Most Wanted.
That's what we was feeling when we was in the studio. And when you in the studio, you ain't really giving a f*** about what, you know, if it's a good idea or not. You making records that come from your heart. And at the time, me and Tupac felt like we were two of America's most wanted. You know what I'm saying? For what we've done in the rap world, for what we've done in general.
But in November of 95, Snoop could no longer ignore his troubles. After more than 2 years of motions and hearings, his trial was finally underway. Snoop and his bodyguard, Malik Lee, stood accused of killing Philip Waldemarion in cold blood. Found guilty, they could spend the rest of their lives in prison. Still, Snoop was shocked when the judge put him under house arrest for the duration of the trial.
Until they took that freedom away from me to where I couldn't be out and partying all night, going to clubs and doing this and that, I didn't really understand this case and realize how vital it was. My heart was beating like I was smoking crack in the courtroom every day.
Snoop and Malik had always maintained they had been lured into the park and acted in self-defense. But as the trial opened, prosecutor Ed Nissen went on the attack. He called witnesses who testified that Snoop and his crew had pursued the victim and his associates looking for trouble.
To me, in my mind, the evidence clearly establishes that they went looking for these guys. They were the ones who really provoked the confrontation.
Regardless of who provoked whom, the fact was both men were armed. The question for the jury was, did Malik and Snoop murder Philip Waldemarion, or were they acting in self-defense?
The evidence that they had at the time of the indictment was such that the DA's office should have known that they didn't have a case against anybody, let alone Snoop. The point is that the shooting was occasioned simply by the fact that this kid walked up to the Jeep and started to pull out his gun. That's why he got shot.
For Snoop, the trial was a harrowing experience.
Every time they say he's looking at 25 to life, or he just brutally murdered somebody, you know, just depicting me sideways, you know what I mean? Something that didn't happen. You know, it was terrible.
With his life and his future very clearly on the line, Snoop's friends and family rallied behind him.
Snoop was our best friend, so we came down to give up our support for him.
When we have a break or something, I would always, you know, give him that motherly hug and let him know I'm there and it's gonna be all right.
Even a man who barely knew Snoop came to court to lend his support, his father. Although the two had been estranged for much of Snoop's life, Burnell Varnado left his job in Detroit and moved to L.A. to be with his son.
I took early retirement just to come out here to be with Snoop, because I know for a fact, if he ever needed me then.
And just, you know, built a relationship on the day instead of, you know, what happened last year or why you wasn't there or whatnot.
At the end of January 96, after 4 long months, the prosecution rested its case. The defense, on the other hand, believed the state had failed to prove Snoop and Malik's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. They felt compelled to call only a single witness to the stand.
I think that by the end of the case, the jury had had it, and they wanted to go home. And that was one of the other reasons why we cut short our presentation on defense.
It all went down to 12 jurors. So, it was in there.
On February 21st, after 6 days of deliberation, the jury announced they had reached a verdict.
I was nervous. Expecting whatever, ready for whatever. Whatever they was gonna give me, I was ready for. Probably the scariest day of my life.
Main City, come to order. This court is now in session.
They read McKinley Lee's name first.
We, the jury, in above entitled action, find the defendant, McKinley Lee, not guilty of the crime of murder in the first degree.
And then they read my name.
We, the jury, in above entitled action, find the defendant, Calvin Brothers, not guilty of the crime of murder in the first degree. Violation of Penal Code Section.
I just bowed my head and just prayed to God. Thanked him that it was finally over with.
He had beaten the murder rap and walked away a free man, but Snoop would never be the same.
We put everything in the right perspective as far as my life, as far as not wanting to bring no harm to nobody or to betray myself like that anymore. And from that day on, I seen myself turn into a different person, creating myself into a man.
25-year-old Snoop Dogg had gotten rich by glorifying gangs and guns. Now he hoped to distance himself from that life. But at Death Row Records, that was easier said than done.
I wanted to put positivity in it and you know, make peace with people. And they didn't want to see it like that. They wanted to keep the Death Row image the way it was.
Snoop's change of heart put a strain on his friendship with Tupac Shakur. Tupac was still reveling in Death Row's gangsta image and feuding with rival rappers, a dangerous game Snoop wanted no part of.
He expected me to be more down with him, as far as like all out. Whoever you got a problem with, I got a problem with. And I didn't see it like that.
Distancing himself from Death Row was a decision that may have saved Snoop's life. In September 96, Tupac and Suge Knight traveled to Las Vegas to see a heavyweight title fight. Under different circumstances, it was a trip Snoop would not have missed. As his old friends cruised the Vegas Strip, a gunman opened fire on their car. A bullet grazed Suge's head. Tupac was hit four times, twice in the chest.
My heart went out to him, and it had to happen like that because, you know, I had love for Pac, and I was like, I would have been right in the car with you.
For 6 days, Tupac fought for his life in a Las Vegas hospital. Snoop went to his side, and although Tupac was unconscious, Snoop made peace with his friend.
I let him know I loved him, and, you know, he probably didn't hear me, but I know his spirit heard me, so I'm cool.
Snoop left the hospital, but a short time later, he heard the devastating news on the car radio. Tupac was dead.
I immediately started crying, and I was driving, and a few people on the side of me, they looked at me, and they rolled the window down. They was like, just letting me know it was all right. It was terrible. It was the worst. Emotionally, I was lost. You know, I didn't have Dre. Tupac had just got killed. Suge Knight was in jail. And I was on my own, lost.
In November 1996, Snoop Doggy Dogg released Dogfather. The album debuted at number one, but there was little celebration. His friend Tupac Shakur was dead. Dr. Dre had left Death Row, and Snoop wanted out too. Label boss Suge Knight was serving time for assault, but Snoop's lawyers managed to negotiate a deal to free Snoop from his contract.
It wasn't an easy let me go, but you know, that's what lawyers are for. They go through all that hardball battling.
Snoop signed with rap impresario Master P and recorded for his label called No Limit. The Game Is To Be Sold Not Told received a lukewarm reception when it was released in 98, but nothing could dampen Snoop's joy. He was free at last.
Master P was willing to step up, take on anything that was, you know, coming my way as far as negativity. And I needed that more than a record label. I needed a friend. And I needed love and comfort and space to breathe and a new environment where I could get back into doing what I do.
I think Snoop came back to being Snoop Dogg as far as being comfortable with being Snoop when he went to No Limit. He felt more free, I think.
Snoop laid low for more than a year, then reunited with his mentor, Dr. Dre. The two headed straight for the studio to record The Chronic 2001, the sequel to the album that made them famous.
He didn't even look behind it. We just moved forward.
I tried to do my thing without him. He tried to do his thing without me. And it just doesn't work as well.
In the summer of 2000, Snoop and Dr. Dre were back in the spotlight, headlining an all-star hip-hop tour they called Up in Smoke.
We got a chance to really tell each other, you know, how we feel about each other.
It's that bond, you know, when you're on the road, you're seeing each other every day. It's like it's genuine. It's something that's going to be with us for life.
When he's not on the road, Snoop spends most of his time at home with his family in the suburbs of Los Angeles. Snoop says he sees himself as a role model, living proof that an escape from the mean streets is possible.
I come from an environment where I was surrounded with negativity, and I did right, and then I did wrong, and then now I'm doing right again. So I proved to him that you can do wrong and fall down and make mistakes and do right.
Today, Snoop Dogg is not just a musician, but a cultural phenomenon. With a count of 17 studio albums, he has had a film and television career to match, including cooking shows and product lines with friend Martha Stewart. The unlikely duo has become a social media sensation. From gangster rapper to one of pop culture's most beloved icons, Snoop Dogg has proven that he can and will do it all.
Listen and subscribe to Behind the Music on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Be sure to rate and review Behind the Music on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Want more episodes? You can watch remastered, Best of the Vault, and new episodes of Behind the Music only on Paramount+.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.